Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. As I've said many times, and a lot of you have heard, but I will continue to say that our goal is here on Central Coast Voices to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices really wants to address how today's choices affect our community today and our community tomorrow, and the long-range ramifications of changes and what we pay attention to in our society, and frankly, sometimes the long-range ramifications of what we're not paying attention to and we should probably pay attention to. We're going to have a wonderful program today. We are going to do something that is, I would sort of call an oxymoron, and that is we're going to have a radio discussion about writing. We're going to talk with folks from the 35th Annual Central Coast Writers Conference. The theme this year, the theme of what we're going to talk about today really is social justice through writing and journalism. The conference is really an annual destination discussion for writers, teachers, students, editors, and publishers. I'm probably going to remind you this of about, five or six times during the program, if not more, and that is you don't need to be a writer already to be part of this process, and you don't need to even want to be a writer ever. I can tell you if you look at the list of the people who are speaking at this conference and what they're speaking about, my thought is if I never wanted to write a word for the rest of my life, I'd want to be there for 3 days, and you may want to think about that. Each year this goes on. It's been 35 years. It's a three-day event. It's at Cuesta College primarily. It's not only a conference to learn things, but it's really a conference to network and gain access and understanding to a lot of things. This is a very successful conference. It has been going on, as I said, for 35 years, and it is considered by Writers Magazine the best conference in the West. My guest today are Terry Bayes, and she is the conference coordinator. Peter Dunn, who is a Hollywood screenwriter, and he's with us on phone. And Katya Singhal, who is a humanitarian journalist and author and also a professor of journalism at Cal Poly, if I recall correctly. Peter, are you with us on the line?
I am here.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad you could join us, and I'm glad you're going to be here next weekend. And I'm just sorry you can't be in the room with us, but we'll make you speak instead of write today.
Okay.
Terry, let me start with you, and let's talk about the history of the conference and why this is an important event in our community.
Well, the conference was started by Lillian Dean, who was a professor at Cuesta College 35 years ago, because she felt the need to bring the writing community together. Writing is a very solitary activity, and we all need a little bit of juice and help and networking and love to keep going where we're going. So we've always included lots of diverse voices and lots of different genres. We have poetry, we have nonfiction, we have journalism, we have screenwriting, and then we also included a marketing arm to it. So those writers who have finished a work in progress and want to get an agent, a publisher, an editor, or put their work on the screen are able to do it. And so we very much make it so it's very social and it's very accessible. And so we have all of our meals together and we network a lot. And it's meant to take the quiet, shy writer and turn them into a warrior writer.
Peter, I want to, the key question for me that I wanted to kind of get on the table before I forgot about it, was most people who write, or in my mind, most people who write, are writing for someone else to read the written word. As a screenwriter, you're writing for a transition to theater, if you will. Whether it be screenwriting or writing for live theater, it's a whole different process. And I know that it's probably not the first time you've heard the question, but how, as a screenwriter, do you write differently than say, Katya does as a nonfiction writer?
First of all, Katya's writing is brilliant, and she has the heart and courage of anyone I know to do the work that she does. My hat is off to Katya, and I'm excited to be on this show with her and to be at the conference with her. My approach to doing what Katya does and other authors do when they write for somebody to read their material is very much the same. I have to go deep inside myself to find the truth of the matter and not to simplify reality, and although not to complicate it either, but to clarify and educate and expand people's thought processes. And we do that in performance. The writing technique is different in that it's mostly dialogue, it's mostly behavior, and the best dialogue we know is what's not being said in the scene. Whereas in writing, and Kathy will speak to this, for the reader, you have to fill in the blanks often. In fact, that's our obligation as writers. In fact, all artists and writers, I think, learn at this conference that they have an obligation to their art that goes far beyond sales, and that they have to write for more than money. They have to write to make a difference. And really, this whole idea of the writer as warrior, whether it's journalism or whether it's screenwriting or playwriting, is meant for each writer to face the obligation to expand humanity, understanding, empathy, and to solve problems, to really, really solve problems. And you can only do that by viewing or reading some of Katya's work, for example, and you see how enormous problems are that were created by humans and can be solved by them. But the artists have to lead the way. I don't know whether that answers your question.
That answers my question delightfully. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I want to talk for a minute. Well, actually, I'll get into it in a minute. I want to talk to Katya about some of the things that she has written. But in my excitement to talk about this topic and get things rolling today with my wonderful guests, I forgot to remind our listeners that they can give us a call if they want. It's a call-in program. They can be part of the discussion. That can be questions, insights, or just, inquisition, if you will, about the topic. But the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And I'm sorry I missed that at the start of the program. Katya, I looked at your brief bio on the website for the conference, and I was, I guess, you don't pick topics to write about that one could find to be... you're a nonfiction writer, okay? My observation is, though, I think we mostly assume nonfiction writers are biographers, historians, and probably a lot of times pick reasonably safe topics. You obviously don't pick safe topics. I don't know if it's your latest book, but you did one on the exiled from the killing fields of Cambodia to California and back. I haven't read it. I can tell you after now knowing about it, I will read it. But I'm curious about how you pick a topic like that and how you work through a topic like that as an author and, for lack of a better way of putting it, maybe staying neutral enough in the discussion to not get emotionally involved in the topic.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I also have to thank Peter. Thank you so much for the kind words. I'm like in awe of you. So I think that shows something about the Central Coast Writers Conference. Everyone is very supportive and incredibly generous. And Peter just demonstrated that. But back to... for me, all my nonfiction, my background is as a journalist. So I've always kind of had the thing where I go back to writing as the old journalism mantra is bringing voice to those who need to be heard or trying to bring up issues that you think people need to know more about. And I try to keep... just inform people and let them make their own decisions. So with Exiled, what happened actually is I was aware of the fact that legal permanent residents, especially within who'd come to this country as refugees, were facing deportation. And so I was particularly interested in the Cambodian American community because of the legacy of violence and what they had endured before they came to this country, having survived genocide in Cambodia, and then what it was like as refugees resettled here, and then facing deportation. So I really mostly just went at it as wanting to let people know the bigger story, and then they could decide for themselves whether it's right to deport them or not. I'm not going to tell you that. I just want to show the background, how it affects the families, what they endured before, what they endured after, and how it affects society. So I try to come at it in that way. I'm not sure if I answered the question.
you did answer the question. But there's another part of it, and that is that that's such a personal topic for the people involved that you're working with. I'm wondering how you really persevere with your neutrality as you're writing it. I suspect you could probably go back and hand your rough manuscript to an editor with the question of, the first thing I'd like you to look at, editor, is how much of my own feeling about the injustice that was involved here got in the way of the story. Not that it wasn't part of the story, but maybe my strong feelings about it became part of the story.
That's probably one of the hardest things. Yeah, and it's true, because I get very intimate with it. I follow several families, and I get very close with them. Because I'm following them over a number more than a year. I got a text at one point, and a family member died while I was reporting it, and they're texting me about this. And it's very hard to keep that distance. But I think I always go back to the journalism thing, where you're not writing for them, you're writing for the audience. And so you try not to let the relationships influence. So an editor's very useful. I also, though, I step back. So they will tell me something, and I will put that, but then I will research and say, okay, this is the reality. All the people facing deportation had committed crimes. Some of the crimes were as minor as joyriding. Some crimes were more serious, like murder. They all did time for those crimes and then faced deportation. But sometimes their accounting of the crimes differs from the legal account. So I present both to my readers, and then that way I ensure it's fair. So they have what that person has said, but then also, okay, this is actually what the legal record has. And I, in one case, I could not contact the victim anymore, but I did contact the judge and lawyers who had been involved with that, and let them have their say too. So it's not just that one account. But I agree with you, that is probably the hardest part, is because you do get so close to these people because you're involved so intimately for so long.
Yeah. Well, as you're talking about that, it occurred to me it also brings up another dilemma, and that is that story in some cases can come across rather dry. And in order to engage your reader, I think that this is a bad word, and this is probably not, or a bad choice of words, and probably not the best word for the situation, but it's one that comes to mind. You have to animate the individuals in the story enough so the reader has an understanding of really who they are as people, because you're not writing fiction. Okay, so the imagination of the reader can be broader in fiction than in nonfiction, because you really want the reader to be engaged with that. But sometimes the reader might find that, for lack of a better word, boring.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way, because for me, there are no boring stories. Like, as a journalist, the world is so fascinating. Okay. People are so fascinating.
I'll back up a second. I'm currently reading a book which shall remain nameless at the moment, because I don't want to slander anybody, on a fascinating contemporary topic. And I'm primarily a reader of nonfiction. I have to confess, the last fiction work I read was probably 2.5 years ago, and I've probably read at least 5 or 6 pieces of fiction, of nonfiction, this year, both reading and on audiobooks. It's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating story about a contemporary issue within the political ramifications of our current society.
I think I get it.
And the author is presenting incredibly good information, and it's becoming almost impossible to read because it is too driven with detail and without any emotion.
I completely understand now. I think the key is, I tackle the stories not from the issue, but from the people. So exiled, while it underlined there is this issue, I'm not talking about the issue as much as I'm just telling you people's lives. So, for example, one of the people in the story, David, I tell you about what it was like growing up in Cambodia during the genocide, and then how he remembers one time they're basically starved most of the time, but then one time they did get food, and how he couldn't eat any because he'd be sick. Telling you about when he was resettled in Long Beach and how he got involved with gangs. And I'm telling you about now how his little son Solomon follows him everywhere. So I guess it's by telling personal stories, and then within that you understand the bigger issues. But I think the key for me is always people. We relate to people, and if we tell people's stories, I think they're almost always engaging. So I think I understand.
And that's one of the classes, and one of the things that Peter is so good at is he actually teaches you to pull the emotion and the heart out of it. So if you're writing a memoir and you say, on this day my Nana died, but he pulls more of what you felt and what you saw and how it changed you and how it changed the people around you. And that's one of the brilliant things he does, is he teaches everybody to pull the emotion out of the story that they're telling.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good transition into what I wanted to talk to Peter about at the moment, which is, I guess you do some life writing workshops, which I am assuming are general, since it's done at, the Motion Picture Home.
That's right.
So it's mostly for an elderly population that have a lot of stories to tell and maybe have never had the experience of ever telling them or ever even feeling like they were worth telling. So how do you broach that subject? Somebody who walks into your workshop for the first time and their first comment is, I do not believe my story has anything really worth telling anyone. My children and my grandchildren stopped listening to me years ago. So why in the world should I do this?
You're describing every person who's ever walked into that class.
I'm the oldest person in the room, Peter, I can identify with it.
Okay. Everybody says, well, you know, who cares about my life? And after we discuss that, they talk about wanting to leave their story for their children or their grandchildren, you know, what they did with life. My class is different in that, referring to what Terry was just talking about, is for them to be willing to look at their story and write about it and promise that if they have to change, they will, because they invariably change their story. We carry our stories along our entire lives that are fabricated in the moment of distress or fear or elation, and we frame them that way forever. And then when we try to write about them, we realize then the perception we had then, the walls we put up of defense, for example, because an incident hurt us so much, have distorted the truth. And when we have enough distance, we look back and we say it might not have happened that way. And we discover a particular empathy within us that gives us back what was taken. It is not to settle the score. And memoir is not a dumping ground. It's the opposite. It's a gathering and an offering of insight that age gives us, that wisdom gives us, that is lost in the telling. And to go to the point that Katya was making, and from your question of dry writing versus really fine journalism, it is the word that Katya constantly uses, story. Our job is to tell a story. And when we write our memoir, we're telling the story not of what we did, but how we became the human being we are. Because our children and grandchildren don't need to know what we did. They will never experience that. But they need to know how you got through it all, what made you, what made Grandma and Grandpa so beautiful, so comforting, so generous, so calm, compared to Mom and Dad.
They have a common enemy.
Yeah. Yes.
And so they begin to rediscover the child in them. This isn't therapy in any way, but the young person in them that is still there, that they've had to compromise or in some ways hide, or because they were told they aren't good enough. Why can't you be like Sally down the street? Why can't you play ball like Joey? You know, you'll never be as good as your twin brother. That kind of comment damages. Writing about it heals it. you know, and all good writing heals it. But it's story. So, yes, you walk in and say, is my life worth writing about? It is, but primarily to save your own life. Others enjoy that. Others will take from it what they will, but it's something necessary, especially toward the end of the life. My students are in their 80s and 90s, and it's time for them to recognize how beautiful they are again. And that's what I teach.
And boy, that's I've got a million questions, and it's hard to follow up after that. I'm sorry.
You should come to the conference and take his class.
I understand. I'm curious about whether or not you tie a desire for oral history into this process or not. I'm a lousy writer, by the way, but I have written, and people have actually wanted to read it on a rare occasion, generally in newspapers. But I've discovered that one of the things that seems to work well as a bad writer, or as a writer trying to get by doing a little bit of decent writing, is that the audio narrative that plays in my brain, that for lack of a better word is a monologue, becomes a tremendously good transition as opposed to writing something first. And I'm wondering, with people who are resistant to that kind of process, and this may be applied to you, Katya, also, when you're looking at a topic before you've put the pen to it, whether or not an audio story in your own brain, or maybe an audio story walking through your own house or sitting in a park with no one listening but yourself, is a way to really build the foundation of writing the authentic story.
No.
Okay. Not the first time I've heard that.
Allows to tell that story over and over. Yeah. Writing refuses to do something that telling our story to ourselves over and over allows, which is to deny some reality. Writing demands absolute truth. So if you wrote down with all the crazy stories that are going on in your head, that go on in all of our heads, we begin to say, it wasn't quite that way. And we start seeing the truth. Writing doesn't allow us not to tell the truth. And it depends. It doesn't depend on whether Katya is writing her great journalism work, or whether you take the same story and you novelize it in, like, The Lotus Eaters by Tatiana Sully, you know, or you write it about Behind the Beautiful Forevers by Catherine Boo. It's the same story about, you know, that Katya wrote about in Cambodia. One is novelized, one is not novelized, but it always comes down to the truth, to the story, and it takes from every writer, and you're talking about your own writing now and your own stories in your mind, to sit down and make sure you're telling the absolute truth. Now, Katya does it by all her research and by being there, by tasting the food, by feeling the heat, by sweating, by being afraid, by knowing, you know, and so when she becomes one with the people she's writing about, she has then verified her authority to write about it. And we have to do that with ourselves. We can't imagine who we are. We have to sit down and paint that picture and look at it, and it disgusts us at first, you know. But then we get through that, and we find the beautiful person we are that needs to be discovered again, that gives us all our strength, morally, ethically, spiritually. And, you know, I don't like oral histories for that reason, because people spin stories, and every time they tell it through the years, it gets grander and more, you know, more focused on the ego and distorted. And I think writing doesn't allow that. Yeah.
And I have to interject, there is no such thing as a bad writer. You're just a new writer.
Okay. I don't know. No, I'm only kidding.
I've run across some writers that have been around for a long time that I think are still bad writers. But anyway, but I'm not a good judge of that. So I think, but Peter, I think that's very important, and I really appreciate that, because what you're basically explaining to us is that we have the ability in oral histories to be more deceptive and deceitful, if you will, in what we're presenting. Once you put it to paper, and the paper doesn't change by itself, it's not an etch-a-sketch, it becomes far more difficult to be deceptive, and that that's a key thing to writing.
Absolutely. It really trains you to be truthful. I don't know how else to say it. And you know that if you have siblings, relatives who have experienced, been at some place when something's happened and everybody has a different view of it. I have two brothers who, when I tell them about our childhood, talk to them about it, they look at me like, that's not the way it happened at all. You know, we have had three different childhoods, living in the same room, with feeling each other's breath at night. We were so jammed into
I should introduce room. You to my brother. Yeah.
So it comes down to we are born with something in us that makes us necessary for the rest of the world. And someone, and I can't remember who it was, darn it, said we all, each one of us carries a piece of somebody else's puzzle. And so we have a reason to be here, and we have to express it artistically. We just have to, because art leads the way. It's led every revolution, and it needs to lead it today, which is what Writers at Warriors is about, is to use our talent as writers and as painters and as poets and composers and filmmakers to dig at the truth and to present it relentlessly, because it's all we have. It's all we have. I think it was, I can't remember the Greek poet who said, the first casualty of war is the truth. And so we are at war every day with the truth here. And we need to speak out.
Yeah, and it's becoming a little bit harder to not be at war with the truth on a regular basis. But
absolutely.
That's a discussion for another program. I can
right, but historically,
yeah.
You know, the world goes through that.
Yeah.
Every so often, and yeah. We're in the middle of it now.
Yeah. I want to remind our listeners, and we're going to certainly continue this conversation, but because I get scolded often for people who don't know what the topic is of the program because they came into things later, and I apologize for that. We're talking about the 35th Annual Writers' Conference, which is coming up the latter part of next week at Cuesta College, and I've got Terry Bayes, Peter Dunn, and Katya Singel with me. And we're talking about that topic. I do need to remind folks, because I'm asked to remind you, that the fall pledge drive was recently concluded last Friday evening. And after wrapping it up, it was made clear that we are still a little shy of our goal. And if you donated during the pledge drive, we thank you very much. And if you've donated continuously, we, of course, thank you very much. And if you haven't yet become a member or renewed your support, please take a moment now and continue thinking about that by contacting us at kcbx.org and being part of the KCBX community here. And I thank you very much for letting us share that information with you, because we're having a serious discussion, but I need to remind people that KCBX's subscribers are what keep us on the air. So I thank you very much for that. I want to emphasize, and Terry can probably expand upon this, that the kind of discussion we're having right now, we're not talking about a writer's conference. We're talking about what it's like to really work through the catharsis of being a writer. And I think one of the things that is important to me as part of this being part of the conversation is that it really is a discussion. If I had never put a word to pen to paper to write a single word, listening to Peter or Katya talk about what that process is makes that a very rewarding process. And I think that that's why we probably need to make sure that people understand that this is a writer's conference, but it's not a conference just for writers.
Exactly.
And I don't know how you convey that to a lot of people.
Well, what I tell a lot of people, if you're a writer in that you're thinking about buying a pen, you should come to the conference. And I also tell you that the main way we communicate now is through email and writing and Facebook posts and Instagram. Well, that's a little more pictures, but you still have to put the words down. And those who write compelling, even if it's 140 characters, get more what they want out of life than those that don't. So if you just want to improve your email or your grant writing abilities, this can help. I mean, my husband comes along because he's forced to, because he's married to me. And he took one of Peter's class 2 years ago, and this guy you put a pin in his hand, his head explodes. He now, one of Peter's classes, and I get a love note every morning of my life now.
Oh.
Somehow, Peter gave him permission to do this one part of his life as a writer. And he doesn't question it. He doesn't. It's authentic and strange. And I have to hide the notes half the time because they're inappropriate. But my point is that his life is now better, and is mine, because he now has given himself permission to write.
Well said.
And with just a small piece of the day,
exactly,
on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But my observation would be, how long has this been going on for now? Is writing you these notes?
It's been about 2 years now.
Yep.
So he's written you the equivalent of a small book.
Exactly.
Okay. He just can only do it a day at a time.
I'm going to put it together, a sticky note book. There are sticky notes that are. Yeah.
Peter, I want to get to what is probably a little less introspective part of this topic that it was kind of at the top of my list of questions to ask you, because I think it's a dilemma that screenwriters probably go with. And that is, when you write a screenplay, you oftentimes have to then relinquish control of the screenplay. So the discussion we had earlier about when pen to paper happens, that becomes the truth and the validity that you can't deceive with as you can in an oral history. My hunch is, to some extent, everything you write becomes on the back end an oral history.
Once it hits the stage, you mean, in front of the cameras?
Yeah, in front of the cameras.
Yeah, it does. And one goes into that as a screenwriter or television writer to knowing that this is a, you know, it's a community effort. It's not about the writer. Often, I will sit in my office after polishing a script and sending it down to the set. An actor will come in and question a couple of lines of dialogue or the purpose of an entire scene. And we sit down and we clarify that. If I haven't made it clear in the way I've written it once, then I'll sit there in the room with that actor and we'll polish that scene so that the same message is there, the same intention is there, but it's in a way that that actor can portray it better. Sometimes they come in and say, do I really need to say this line? It's a beautiful line. I know you love it, but I think I can play it better than say it. And often they can. And we know that that's the process. It doesn't belong to me once it goes down to the stage. And any television or screenwriter or person who wants to be a television or screenwriter, film writer, has to know going in that that's the process. It becomes something that others can make something even better out of, one hopes. And you have to leave it alone. You just have to leave it alone.
Do you always get to be a party to the actual production process? Or do you oftentimes have to just turn over the manuscript and then just walk away?
It varies. You can earn it through experience and then make a deal where you have the right, you know, to protect it. If you're writing for the stage, for Broadway, for example, no one can change a line. Not the director, not an actor, not a producer. No one. Only the writer has the authority to change a line. And if, when that show goes on the road and plays across the country and civic theaters and, you know, local theaters, every word is always the same. It's not the way in television and film, I can say. So you have to earn that right. And sometimes you prefer to give it up, quite frankly. Sometimes writers prefer to say, great, Mr. Spielberg, have fun with my script. Thank you for the $1 million. And they go on to the next script.
The way that I've always described it is writing a screenplay is like you get together with a bunch of people and you decide to go to Greece. And for weeks, you pore over these books and you decide when we land, we're going to go here and we're going to stay there and we're going to eat here and we get there. And then you finally land in Greece and everybody goes a different way and does their own thing the way they want.
Yeah, because they may have decided by the time they got to Greece after the plane flight, they didn't want to be in the same room with each other.
Exactly.
That could happen too. Yeah.
That could be.
Yeah. Peter, have you ever taken one of your screenplays and committed it to a written book? So you've, because I don't know how common that is, and I'm sorry I didn't do enough research to know that in advance, but I'm wondering whether or not when you look at a screenplay, you might say sometimes, you know, I'd really also like a version of this that the end audience can read for themselves as opposed to have someone else act out for them?
Personally, no, I haven't. I know other writers who have occasionally novelized their screenplays. But for me, the process of writing a screenplay is different than the process of writing a novel. It calls on a different part of my talents, I suppose, and my emotions. And so I would be going over dead ground, and I would be trying to make something, you know, a stepchild of something that already is something that I gave birth to. And my characters, I always tell my students, have to be characters that I tell, especially women this, more than men who are writing about their characters, that woman they're writing about isn't somebody who lived in their brain. It's somebody, came from their womb. And so once that process happens in screenwriting, I can't duplicate it by taking that same screenplay and novelizing it. I might think that my work is unfinished with that screenplay, and I want to take it deeper, and then I can decide if it's a novel I want to write about to take that theme or that argument to another place. But I would use novel, especially the techniques in novelizing, to do that.
Very good point. Thank you. I appreciate that. I want to remind folks that we do have a little bit of time left. If you'd like to call in and you have some questions or observations about this writing process and the conference coming up, you're welcome to be part of the discussion. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. And this is a fascinating topic, and as often happens when the topic is fascinating enough, people are too involved in listening to call us, and that does happen, and it's happens either way sometimes. Katya, you write predominantly nonfiction. I don't know, do you only write nonfiction?
Actually, my next book project, I'm trying to do fiction. Well, it started as nonfiction, and then no one would talk to me, so now it's becoming fiction because I couldn't get it how I wanted to. But when I was younger, I used to do some fiction. But for me, even fiction, it's all going to start from, as fiction often does, from things I know about or experience, and so, then branch off from there.
Referred to often as historical fiction.
What I do?
Yeah.
Historical nonfiction, you mean?
It is when you write fiction, do you often look at it tied to a true incident or a true environment?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it often comes from something from historical to my life, usually. So not that historical, but yeah, it's something I've experienced or something. But I think sometimes also, I'm glad you brought up like fiction versus nonfiction. Sometimes people think nonfiction, they think dry, boring. They don't think it's crafted, but that's one of the classes I teach at conference is just on nonfiction, the craft of writing nonfiction, in that even though it's true, you still have to craft it. Like you were saying, the book you're reading, it wasn't interesting. So the writer of nonfiction has to think in scenes. They have to think in terms of characters the same way fiction does. It's just a different way. And I think so sometimes people forget that nonfiction, you're actually crafting the same as fiction. It's just true.
Exactly right. Creative nonfiction.
That was kind of a tangent. I'm sorry.
that's perfect. It's it's interesting. I've never been able to define to anybody why I am locked into pretty much reading nonfiction.
Because truth is stranger than fiction.
Maybe it's because in my mind it's because I can relate it to and engage it to other parts of the world we live in, and I can't think of a better word. This is the word my wife uses, which is I am the absolute grabber of too much information constantly, and she just wishes I would shut up and not try and reshare it with people after I've somehow gathered it. But there's so much in life that is in the world that is still fascinating. The imagination of it as fiction doesn't seem to be part of the world for me. And as I'm saying that, it just occurred to me, though, however, I probably 90% of the fiction that I do acquire is through theater. either through live stage or movies, which I love to go to. And I don't know why I don't read them. I only somehow try and experience them as movies or live stage, which Peter means that, and I think that applies for a lot of people, that the fiction of a live presentation or a movie becomes a compelling immersion that sometimes the written word isn't for some of us.
And I think we all learn differently. Yeah. Like some people, I'd rather read a book than see a movie. But I also see a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. But for me, because my mind's super creative and super out there, I want to picture what their head looks like and what their eyes look like and what their mm-hmm. face looks like and what their I want that privilege and how to pronounce their name. I always pronounce really the names really wrong in books. So when I have a conversation with that people, they're like,
actually, yeah. There's not a single radio program I've done that I haven't pronounced somebody's names wrong.
So to me, the art form of reading is that I'm part of the book. I'm making decisions based on my life for this book. So, for example, if they say, well, we walked along the shore. Well, to me, that's my shore. That's, you know, Pismo Beach. It's our shore. Where it could be, if you're from Michigan, it could be that shore. So what I like about books more is that it's an active thing for me.
That's exactly what Stephen King says. It allows the reader to have her own movie.
Oh, very good point.
So you're saying I'm as smart as Stephen King, right, Peter?
I am.
Or he's just engaged in the topic. Yeah. Okay, Peter, you do a series of workshops and artists in residence work in Ireland. Do Irish writers write differently than American writers?
They do. They certainly do because they carry their history with them more formidably and authentically and clearly than we do as Americans. Our culture tends to dissipate history, and their culture tends to embrace it and glorify it and to rely on it and to take it to its next step historically. And so when they look at characters and they write about them, which makes them so magical, their characters are centuries old inside, you know. We always talk about the old soul in some people, especially young people, but they see it in every person. And they have a particular kind of story wisdom that they have been formulating over the centuries that we have not yet. We're still too, I think, of writers to do what they have been able to do. But, yeah, it's a totally different way to teach, and I was taken aback by how deep writers' questions come from those cultures where writing is the central informer and educator and illuminator, and where here it's the tweet or the email, you know, or the television show, you know, with the laugh track. And it's inauthentic. I don't want to, slam our own culture. But in terms of literary histories, they're writing from one and we are not.
Very, very good point. We do have one call. Let me go ahead and Becky, you are there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm really enjoying this conversation. And so I've attended the Writers' Conference in the past, and my profession is I do marketing and public relations. So I, like Carrie was saying, I do writing, but not in the way that the guests do. But I'm signed up for my first masterclass, and I'm a little nervous about it, putting myself out there. So I was wondering if Peter could explain what a masterclass looks like at this conference.
Well, welcome to the conference.
Thank you. The garbage truck's going by right when I called, so I'm shutting my windows. Sorry about that.
Well, Terry can certainly fill you in on this as well. I can tell you my take on it from standing in front of a group for 6 hours is to encourage the notion one carries with her every day as a writer, in that the writing isn't the product, the writer is. And the reason we write, and the reason Katya writes or I write, is to become a better human being. And I can only do that in my way by writing. I used to be a professional illustrator and painter, and I could, at that point in my life, only tell my truth and expand my own self by painting, by being alone in front of an easel and trying to express something that's inside of me that I didn't understand, and I allow my spirituality or something, my muse, to tell me what it is I'm thinking or what I'm feeling or what I'm made of. So when you leave the master's class, you'll probably have a lot of good writing tips, but the most important one is when someone asks you what you're doing, you say, I'm writing. Because when you identify yourself as a writer, you're identifying yourself as a human being who has curiosity above and beyond most other people for the sole purpose of being a better person so you can give away the betterness. You know, and if you find a freedom in that, then you have to understand that freedom's purpose is to free other people, and your writing will be better because of it.
So I'll expand on that a little bit. We have 9 different master classes, and those are on Thursday from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock at Cuesta. Each one of them is an immersion process using different genres. So Peter's doing a contemplative memoir one. I call it the crying class. He makes everybody cry, but it's kind of awesome. And then we have a screenwriting one. We have the editor of Script Magazine who is coming from New York and teaching you how to be a screenwriter without living in L.A. and pulling all of the out of that. We have Wendelin von Drunen and Mark Parsons doing a young adult one, teaching you everything there is about writing a young adult novel. We have Sam Horn. She's a TEDx speaker. She speaks on circuit with Michelle Obama. She's a big deal. And she's teaching how to take your book, how to write one book, and to turn it into a whole profession. And so she travels the world writing and speaking. And from one book, she's made a whole lifestyle. We have Deborah LeBlanc, who's our most interesting person. She's a death scene investigator and a psychic. And so what she does is it lives in Louisiana, and she goes every time there's...
I was reading about her. I was like, I want to...
Yeah. So basically what she's teaching you is all of her books are from the beginning. The minute she gets the idea to writing them, she's going to publish herself. So she's teaching how to stand alone and just get the whole thing done and get it up and selling, not to have to, okay, now I'm done, now I'm looking for an agent or I'm looking for a publisher. So she's teaching that. And we have Jordan Rosenfeld is teaching how to write a page turner, how to put tension in your work, and missing one. Oh, Jonathan Mayberry. So Jonathan Mayberry is a gentleman who, he's so prolific. He's written like 70 books at this point. But most of his books now have been bought by Netflix and Sony and are turning into TV and TV and screenplays and games and video games and board games. And he's going to teach that whole writing process, how you can make sure that it's called multi... platform writing. So you're writing from the beginning that it's going to turn into something bigger than yourself.
Yeah. So Becky, are you coming for the whole conference?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I am.
So you're going to sort out a lot of things to fit
in. I'm a huge fan of Peter's, and his class was full, but I am taking Sam Horn's class. I couldn't believe there was still room. So I'm excited because I like the idea of learning to write and then also how to, you know, be able to use it across for your work and to make money and to have it be a way to make a living and also connect with people through your message. But I'm looking to learn what my message is going to be. I don't even know. So this is a great opportunity. Thank you guys so much for
thank you, Becky,
for doing this conference.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. A good example of the kind of person that that you want at the conference, and
right,
probably a good example of how it's a networking environment also. We're getting close to being out of time, and there's one thing that I wanted to Katya, you teach journalism, so is there a way you define journalism different than nonfiction writing, or are they really just one's an extension of the other?
You know, they really bleed in together. I guess journalism, usually shorter, but at this point, because most of the journalism I do is not more longer form things, it's similar to it could, like some of my projects, actually Exiled came out of It started as an article for Foreign Policy. So there's a lot of crossover between all of that. And when you're talking platforming and all these other things, and my latest contract I had to sign for a journalism piece said something about, I think now they take away your rights for if it gets into a screenplay, too. They take away all your rights on most contracts.
In the known universe, it says now.
It's
like, okay, is there going to be books on Mars and I didn't know about it yet?
Yeah. So there's a lot of crossover in all of it. At Cal Poly, where I teach journalism, I'm mostly dealing with a lot more basic because it's freshmen. And so it's very there are differences, I guess, and your audiences are different, and length makes it a lot different. And you have to have a bit more of a news peg often in journalism, whereas books, they need to have a longer shelf life. No pun intended on that, but you know, you can't. So there are differences, but there's a lot of similarities.
As I traditionally do the last few minutes of the program is I make sure that I can get out of the way long enough for my guests to actually share their final thoughts. We have a few minutes, and this is a program. We could talk about this forever, obviously, and I hope a lot of people will come for the conference, and then they can talk about it for 3 days or listen to things also. But Katya, what do you want to make sure that that for the listeners of the program today that they take away from this discussion?
I want them hopefully to come to the conference. I'd love to have, I'm teaching two courses, the nonfiction writing and then the other is journalism or kind of how to make a living with writing. And that one actually is interesting because it also crosses over with marketing with your books and other things. But also I do a lot of international writing and kind of it's how I make my living. So that's a fun one. I think I want people to know the openings writing creates and how it interacts with society and I guess with our topic on how we were talking about social justice and how writing can be used to make the world a better place, as generic as that sounds.
it's more necessary every day.
Yeah.
Thank you. Peter, your thoughts?
Well, I'm enlivened by Katya's work, so I go to the idea that when I sit down to write, and I think it's better for everybody, thinking I know what I'm going to write about, I have to take a deep breath and say, okay, but what I'm going to write about today are the things I don't know about, because writing tells me, exposes to me my story. Everybody chooses a topic or an idea to write about, and they sit down to write about it, and then they get stuck. And they think, well, I'm not really great at this, or I don't know it all, and somebody's going to write this better than I am, which isn't the truth, of course. It's because we're not opening up to why we want to write about that story. What is it that started us on this journey with the story, and allow the story to come through us instead of trying to invent it? It is already a part of us, and we have to dig it out of us, and there are reasons for that. I think any writer sitting down wondering if he or she can really write and comes to this conference will learn to trust the process. It will teach us. Writing tells us more than we tell it. And I think that's just a matter of faith. All writers have that. All good writers have a lot of it.
Very good point. Peter, since we have a little bit of time, I want to interject one more thing. Just one other question to you, and that is, how often do you work with the folks at the Motion Picture Home? And I'm hoping that's an ongoing process that you'll continue for a long time. But
I meet with them once a week for 2 hours. I just finished this morning, and I've just begun my seventh year with them, and we've published two books of their work, and we're working on editing a third collection of their essays. It's sort of like our amateur version of, the Paris Review, so to speak. But I stayed with it because it's part of a wellness program, which writing is, all art is part of a wellness humanity and a humanitarian process, and at late in life we need a lot of healing.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah, good point. Thank you very much for sharing that with us, Terry. It's your conference. Tell us about it.
Yes, so now we're down to the now, meat. Okay, I'm the meat and potatoes girl.
You got 2 minutes to tell people how they can still sign up. Okay.
So the Central Coast Writers Conference starts Thursday, September 26th. It's at Cuesta College. The first day is master classes. The master classes are separate. They're $150 each. We limit the classes to 20 students, so it's very intimate. The writer will be immersed. They'll write. They'll critique. They'll talk. And then whatever class they're taking, that instructor has agreed to stay on as a mentor. So if you take Peter's class, then you'll have Peter as a mentor for as long as you need him, and I need him forever. And then on Thursday night, we have the opening keynote, which is six creators on stage talking about creativity under pressure. So it's basically what it's like to have to get your best work done at a certain time every day or every week, basically a writer's room type of collaborative effort. And then Friday we start with our opening keynote, which is Sam Horn. She's doing a seminar about someday is not a day of the week, that there's just no time to wait. You don't wait till someday. You get off your butts and you do your writing now. And then we have 45 teachers having 112 classes for the next 2 days, including, so part of the conference is, the conference price is $300. It includes all lunches, all keynotes, all workshops, and all networking. My staff sits at different tables, so at lunch you can have lunch with somebody if you're not brave enough to go up and do it with them. And then it also it also includes a private critique session, which is a 15-minute one-on-one with our staff. You can choose whichever staff you want. They read your work and they comment. And you can sign up at CentralCoastWritersConference.com.
Yeah. I thank you very much. And I guess I'll kick in this, and that is I'll remind folks that you don't need to be a writer to find it an incredibly enlightening experience.
And you can sign up the day of.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate the conversation we've had with our guest today. I want to remind you that Chris Kington Barker will be with you for the show next week. Chris and I alternate weeks if you're a reasonably new listener. And she is going to take a look at how to prepare and protect against the threat of fire on the Central Coast. She's going to be speaking with three individuals from CAL FIRE about the effects of the what really educating the public is all about with regard to fire safety. We obviously, because of global warming and other things going on, have had some startling reality checks with fire prevention, and that becomes a key factor. She'll have guests from CAL FIRE with her next week, and that's a program that that is be valuable for you to listen to. Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, as I've told you before, which is a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. And you can see the report of Action for Healthy Communities at actionslo.org, which is a snapshot of a kind of life on the Central Coast from both a financial, educational, and social standpoint, a report that's put out every 3 years. Want to thank Joan Gellert Sargent for underwriting this program, as she has done on a regular basis. And I want to thank KCBX for being a partner in this program. We continue to do it every week because you listen. KCBX helps us produce it, and it becomes an outstanding way in which to share the community with you. This is Central Coast Voices. Thank you to my guests, Terry, Peter, and Katya today. It's been a wonderful program. We talked about writing for over an hour, and it wasn't really about writing. It was about the human experience. I thank you for joining us. This has been Central Coast Voices.